Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy Joe Stapleton. My work wife, James Hartigan, he's over there.
Happy International Day of Pink. That's the color, Joe, not the hot dog store.
Oh, remember when I took you to Pink's Hot Dogs?
Yeah.
Coming up on today's show, we've been in the middle of our own ship for so long that we haven't really taken a step back to have a chat about what's going on in the industry as a whole. So today, we're having a little poker news roundup. And what better way to do that than to speak to someone who's on the front lines covering it from Poker News. John Soffin, senior editor, senior U.S. editor for Poker News, will be with us today on today's show. We're going to talk WPT Voyage, the WSOP Tournament of Champions. Robbie Jade Liu is back in the news. And there's a little mainstream television poker crossover going on right now. John's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we basically thought it would be good to get someone who's got their eye on North America on the show, because I think we realized that when you say our shit, Joe, that's very much on the continent of Europe. So let's look at what's happening over the other side of the Atlantic today.
Yeah, all right. Yes. Oh, and speaking of our shit, our very own James Hartigan is now an online professional poker player.
Don't oversell it.
Well, James took part in the Sunday Million anniversary, the 18th anniversary to be exact, that we eventually did commentary for yesterday. He is going to share some of his experience with us, and we'll give y'all a quick summary of what happened on our coverage of this momentous tournament. And this week's superfan is a fellow who won a Silver Power Pass at the Hippodrome a few weeks back during the 300th episode, the poker tournament. We'll go over that later. Then he went to Dublin to play the Irish Open, cashed the main event. More on that later. But now Josh Rawlings is on this podcast challenging me at trivia about the Oscar-winning movie Poor Things. And a little bit of movies and TV coming up in this next segment here. However, I'll be saving my thoughts on Poor Things until we speak to Josh.
Before you want to talk about movies, let's just talk about what people have been saying on Discord in the last 7 days following the release of episode 303. I didn't even pick up on this. It was an unintentional joke that Slander observed. When you were talking about your illness and the fact that you hadn't been part of the Irish Open live stream and said what happened as we played down to the final table, and I think I said the real story was deep runs for people that we know, which Slander identified as unintentional joke of the year. I was not referencing, not alluding to your particular bathroom situation.
Yeah, but accurate and funny, and I can't believe that just shows you how ill I was that I didn't pick up on that joke either. And it's that kind of joke's right up my alley.
Yes. You trashed the new version of Roadhouse that's on Amazon Prime. Big Andy 18 agrees. Let's see if you agree with Andy's review, Joe. Absolutely got to agree about Roadhouse. The better half wants to watch it. I was half watching it during my Thursday grind. It is one of the worst movies I've watched in recent years. If you have an MMA fighter, actually show the fighting. Good God, that shaky cam nonsense was awful. And I'm convinced they were using CGI to emphasize some of the punches. Absolutely terrible. Almost up there with the Winnie the Pooh horror film in terms of unwatchability.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything Andy said, except for the fact that the fighting and the CGI exacerbation of punches was the best part of the movie. I mean, that was the good part. The rest of it was, yeah. And I don't even like trashing movies anymore. I don't like, especially that movie's directed by one of my all time favorite directors,
Doug Liman.
Yeah, and so, by the way, Jake Gyllenhaal's like pretty good in it also. But yeah, man, is it bad? I feel. Oof, all right, moving on.
Depleted ZPM, first of all, wanted to talk about Honor Majesty's Secret Service, and I'm kind of trying to move Bond conversation away from the poker content onto YouTube now, and trying
to
compartmentalize.
You've got to have something for the YouTube page. You got to save something for yourself.
Absolutely. On the subject of that, Depleted was the person trying to encourage me to stream myself playing the Sunday Million when I said last week that I didn't feel ready for it yet. And I stand by that decision, by the way. I can only focus on one thing at once. But yes, I am going to get a plug-in for the YouTube channel. In fact, I'm going to put a link in the podcast description along with a link to our Discord server. And I would highlight that I have put highlights from the 300th podcast recording, video highlights, on that channel. So chances are everyone who's listening to this show heard the full audio show. Now you can see a few of the moments in picture as well as listening to the voices.
I haven't even, I mean, I was there, but other than that, I haven't seen these highlights either. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, fortunately for you, Joe, there will be a link to my YouTube channel in the podcast description. Okay. Any other movies you want to trash this week?
No, actually, I think it's all good from here on out.
Okay.
So on my flight home, I was gone for 30 days. I was really looking forward to just like kicking back, watching a couple of movies. And I did that. I tried to suggest a few times to my girlfriend when we're trying to choose a movie. I tried to suggest this Nicolas Cage movie called Dream Scenario a few times, where he plays like a middle-aged college professor who keeps showing up in people's dreams and kind of becomes a celebrity as a result of it. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I liked the premise of it. And I think it is, can we talk about Nicolas Cage for a second? In that, I know that this isn't like a particularly like novel thing to say, but the disparity between Nicolas Cage performances in some of the greatest acting performances of all time and some of the absolute worst acting performances of all time, it's very bizarre to me. This is one of his best. I think this might be his very best acting performance of all time. I thought this movie was fucking dope. Then, now, I didn't finish it, but then I started watching Ford versus Ferrari. I know everyone watched this movie years ago.
This is the one with Christian Bale and Matt Damon, right?
Yes.
Now, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that film.
I enjoyed it. I think I had about 40 minutes left to go and the plane landed. I think this movie was marketed poorly. I think that if they had called it something else and they hadn't made it seem like it was Matt Damon versus Christian Bale and not Matt Damon and Christian Bale on the same team together, I probably would have seen this movie sooner.
I am pretty sure this is one of those films that has a different title in Europe.
It makes sense. One is because, look, I don't find Henry Ford to be a particularly character I want to root for. Neither do I find Enzo Ferrari to be a character I want to root for is another reason I wasn't that interested in this movie. By the way, neither of those names are played by anyone that I'm discussing right now. It is just a racing innovation, whatever movie played by two. Yes, go ahead. What is it called in Europe?
It's the original title of the movie is Le Mans 66. It was retitled Ford versus Ferrari for the US market, presumably because they didn't want people to think that it was a French language film.
Right. See, I would have been more interested in knowing what happened at Le Mans 66 than Ford versus Ferrari, which I don't give a fuck about at all. Anyway, did not finish it, but not because of any other reason than the plane landed and they made me get off. Okay. Now, I'm not sure how much I've talked about this thus far on the show, some of this is a few months back, I started watching Strange New World, the Star Trek show, and I loved it so much. And I asked people, I think it was people even in our Discord, is Discovery worth going back and watching? They said yes. I went and did that with my girlfriend. It is fucking awesome. I love it.
Which one is Discovery?
It's the one with Michelle Yeoh.
Yes. Yes. No, I very much enjoyed that. I've only watched the first season, though. I think what happened is Netflix lost the rights to it after the first season.
Yeah, because it's on Paramount Plus now, specifically. So, first season of Discovery is fucking... there's a couple of like plot points that I didn't love, but in general, really, really loved it.
Jason Isaacs is in it.
Yes. Yes. Sonequa Martin-Green, it plays the main character. Yes. So... when I get home, my girlfriend had been like champing at the bit to finish Discovery. We were like 7 episodes into a 15 episode season. And I said, you know what? And this was her introduction to Star Trek. So I said, you know what? I think you're ready at this point. There's so much I'm explaining to you about the Star Trek universe and this and that. I'm like, I think you should watch one of the original Star Trek movies. And you know how I feel about Star Trek, the motion picture, which is fucking garbage, which
it
is like...
It is a bit dull.
So we watched Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan, because I thought that would be like a great entry into explaining like what the original series was all about and who Kirk and Spock are. So we watched it and dude, this movie, it is corny. It is got a little bit of cheese to it. But man, I thought this movie holds up so well.
It does.
It's so smart. It's I start thinking about the end of the movie. Like, this is like a Field of Dreams effect for me at this point, where I start crying. I was like crying like 40 minutes into this movie, thinking about the end of the movie. And by the very end, I'm just completely sobbing to the point where my girlfriend's like consoling me. And I'm like, I'm fine. I don't need my back rubbed right now. I just find this movie to be super, super touching. So I'm all
was
like,
the most human.
Yes. Yeah. Just fucking tears streaming. I was and forever shall be your friend. Just fucking just ugly snot crying everywhere.
Which is, so, again, I know we've gone over this before. That's why I hated the second reboot movie so much, because to me it was pissing on this film.
It ruins it.
And this film
is
a classic.
It ruins it, yeah. So my whole point is that Star Trek is all I can think about right now. Like, in the middle of this podcast, we're like 4 episodes into Discovery Season 2, which Season 5, the final season, just dropped on Paramount
Plus.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't have Paramount Plus. I need to find some way of watching this. Oh, you know who else is in Discovery? Clem Fandango.
He shows up. Who does he play in Discovery?
I don't know how to say it without giving away major spoiler.
Okay, fine. Don't yet. And then I know that this segment is dragging a little bit, but the Curb finale, phenomenal. Great last season. Very few slow. There's a couple episodes or like plot points that like I didn't love. But
don't
the Curb
say too much about
so
it
good.
Because I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I've downloaded it to my iPad. I'm going to watch it on a flight tomorrow. By the time I'm on that plane, by the way, I believe that the scoop schedule should be out there, the full schedule of tournaments for the month of May. So by the time you're listening to the show, you should be able to reference the rundown of events, the rundown of tournaments for Scoop 2024. The streaming schedule will follow in the next few weeks. And as we have now moved on to the subject of online poker, let's relive the 18th anniversary of the Sunday Million. So in previous years, Joe, when we've streamed the final day of the Sunday Million anniversary, we come into it having not really seen anything that's happened in the days, hours leading up to it. I actually lived, I'm going to say, 90% of this tournament, having played day one, most of day two. All I missed was playing down from 100 to 33, and then, of course, we watched the rest of it playing down from 33 to a winner when we streamed that Cards Up on Tuesday night. But let's begin at the beginning. I played this tournament with minimal expectation, figured it would kill a few hours on a Sunday evening, and I
learned... Sounds like a familiar story. Sounds kind of like what my Dublin story was starting off as.
Absolutely. And again, during the first, I'd say, couple of hours, nothing really significant happened. I think, you know, stack went up by 10% during the first session of play, maybe was static after the third. Then there's one big hand where, in my opinion, someone overplayed jacks. Snapped it off to a 6-bet shove from me with aces, and so you get the double up, and now it's like, okay, now I have, like, you know, double starting stack. And then you get the reverse of that, where there was an early position raise and multiple callers, and I decide to call in the big blind with 9-3 of spades, because you never know what's going to come. I'm getting a good price. It is a king 3-3 board.
Okay.
The original raiser continues for about 25% of his stack, so I check shove on him, everyone else folds, by the way. And he snaps it off with king, queen. And there is, unfortunately, a king on the turn. So you have the good fortune, you have the bad fortune. So luck balanced out, I would say, on day one. But just by, I think, playing a few hands pretty well, I should say that I'm pretty happy with how I played throughout the 2 days in terms of taking my time over my decisions, letting the clock do its work and not making snap decisions, thinking about bet sizing, and also making correct calls in key spots. Look, I'm going to say I probably made some correct folds as well. You don't know that, right? Because the hand doesn't go to showdown. Maybe there were a couple of times where I got bluffed.
Course.
But I still maintain that I was right to make that fold. So after 7 hours of play, I managed to make it to the end of day one. What kept me going, by the way, was watching Spraggy. I had Spraggy's stream on in the background. And look, I know we've blown smoke up Spraggy's ass a million and one times, but it is something to play all of those tournaments because, like, I'm playing just one game, right? He's streaming multiple tournaments. He is talking through his play. He's answering questions from the audience on both Twitch and YouTube. He's being an entertainer, and he's also playing top-level poker. So I salute Spraggy, and he was my companion. He kept me going during that Sunday. And then, of course, the action resumes on Monday. So here's the weird one. We finished Sunday night with, I want to say, 5,900 players still in.
Okay.
And the bubble, I think, was going to be around 5,300. So I'm thinking, okay, we're 600 off the money. But of course, registration doesn't close until the start of day two. And because of that, there were all these low buy-in sats running on the Monday. When action restarted on Monday evening, there were suddenly 10,500 players. And okay, now we're paying more spots, so the bubbles are like 5,900. But even so, it's like, hold on a second, we've gone from being like a few hundred players away from making the money to now several thousand players. However,
yes. So wait. So it's kind of like I don't really like this term very often. It's like kind of like a double-edged sword, though, right? Because those 5,000 new players or whatever it was are all starting with like 12 big blinds or something.
10 big blinds, correct. So what was ridiculous is within the first 10 minutes, we lost 2,000 players. We then lost another 1,000 in the following 10 minutes. It was carnage. And I would say that it was during this period that I did get very lucky. And I'm a great believer that no one has ever had a deep run in a poker tournament without getting lucky. And it's important to acknowledge that and not say that it's all skill.
Yeah,
yes, I cracked tens with ace 10. Yes, I cracked jacks with tens. Yes, I cracked aces with tens. But again,
when you say, by the way, I know that you are probably, these are all like all in preflop hands?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. But again, happy with how I played. And I'm sure people will have seen a couple of clips because when we start getting deep, right, when we're suddenly through the money bubble and thinking, wow, we've got a min cash. Now let's try and ladder to a min plus cash. Oh, let's try and ladder to the next spot. And then, of course, there are big hands where suddenly, okay, now I'm actually a decent stack. Now I'm suddenly in the top 100. Now I'm actually a contender. And one of those hands was the four bet pot where I had kings. Pretty horrible board for kings. Spraggy was railing my table. He was watching the hand in real time. He was talking through that hand, and he had a perfect read on my hand range, a perfect read on how I was feeling about the situation. And yes, I made a mini hero on the river. I was pretty confident that my opponent had sweet FA, and my mindset was, if they do not shove the river, I am calling anything. My mouse was hovered over the call button, and I'm like, I'm calling anything other than a shove, and I'll think about a shove. But it was a sizable bet, but yeah, snap called and was right.
So wait, I have a question about this hand. So and not really to put you on the spot, but just I think it would be good for our listeners to hear about this. So
sure.
You say that you think your opponent has sweet FA. Do you actually have a range of hands that you are putting your opponent on at this point? I wouldn't, by the way. So again, goes blank.
I do not put them on a range of hands that I am not beating, because I do think that any ace, any jack is not checking through both streets. We get to the river and there's been no aggressive action. And yes, you may check the ace on the flop. Yes, you may check the jack. But I don't believe for one second that they are checking two streets. At that point, I'm confident that they don't have it. And I'm relatively... Here's a question then. Obviously, when the jack comes on the river and I now have a full house, jack's full of kings. If my opponent checks, what in my mind, I'm going, do I have a value bet here? Should I be value betting or just checking it back? That's how confident I am that I'm ahead. But I'm more confident that if I see a bet from my opponent, if they lead the river, that it is going to be a bluff to try and push me off the exact type of hand that I have.
And what did they end up having?
6-7 of hearts.
Okay, that qualifies in the range of sweet FA. Okay.
Yes, yes. But even... at the point where I get up to like 3 million chips, even at the point where I get up to 5 million chips after there's the big hand where I have aces and there are two other players all in, I'm not getting out of line. I'm not getting loosey-goosey, eating a sandwich. I'm playing my trademark style. I've learnt my mistake from the last time I played the Sunday Million. I've learnt my mistake from the event that we played in Dublin. I'm knitting it up. I'm laddering. I'm playing good cards. I'm waiting for the right spots. And that's how I'm able to make it into the top 1,000, into the top 500, looking at those money jumps. And, yeah, to a certain degree, looking at where the big targets are. And I'm not going to lie, when I see that once you get to the top 100, it's $5,000, that is a huge target for me to try and get to. One other thing I should highlight, so many observers watching my table, so many people in chat, so many nice comments both in the live chat on Spraggy's YouTube channel and at the table, and people who've said nice things to me on Twitter afterwards. I genuinely appreciate all the support. Very kind of you. But yes, at that point, it just became about laddering. Once we were down to 103, once I was guaranteed 5K, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to open up my game. And anyway, I've got jacks. I'm not folding jacks in this spot with less than 15 big blinds. Run into Ace King, lose a flip, no complaints, no bad beat story. I had enough good fortune along the way. No one should ever complain about losing a flip, and I'm very happy with the result. And more than anything, and Nick said some very nice things as well. He was observing my table for a while, and Nick was liking the fact that I didn't have any timing tells. He was liking my bet sizing, and he particularly liked a couple of hands I played when I told him what I had. So I'm kind of feeling that I'm getting better at this poker thing.
So do we just fucking quit now? I mean, I don't... You had a deep run. I had a deep run. We made very similar amounts of money in those runs. Like, do we just hang it up? I don't know.
I'm not going to lie to you. This is a nice little Brucey bonus. I could never do this as a way of making a living.
That's what I mean. Like, should we just quit while we're ahead? Like, our ROI as full-on ambassadors is pretty good.
This is only like month three. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I still maintain that where we excel is in doing our day jobs. And on the final day of the Sunday Million anniversary, that's what we got to do because we did stream the final day. 33 players came back. And we thought, okay, there's about 4.5, 5 hours of play in this. And then we're like, wow, this is going super fast. We're down to a final table. Oh my God, we're down to like 4 players. It was almost lightning fast to get down to, I'd say, the second half of the final table.
Yeah, it was. I made the mistake, actually. I think it was my fault because after that first hour, I was like, should be wrapping up not too late today. Should be. Things should be. I should have time to get some more stuff done after this final table ends. And that ended up being less true than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
We did have some superstars left in the event.
That's true.
Now, this is something we can talk about now that we couldn't talk about then. About 3 minutes into the broadcast, we get raided by 2,200 viewers from Giraffe Ganger. And I'm just like, I'm an idiot, first of all. I'm just like, oh, Giraffe Ganger, like, must have decided. And then I was like, oh, no. If we're getting his 2,200 viewers in 30 minutes, he's going to be out of this tournament.
Yeah. And it's a tough one, right? Because obviously, very much appreciate Bert sending his audience to our stream. On the other hand, it is a major spoiler because you know it's going to happen. And yeah, that being said, I don't think it was too big a spoiler. Burt came into the final day as one of the shorter stacks. He was in a kind of double up or go home situation. Graf Tekel, on the other hand, Jan Zarens was the other big name still in the field on the final day. Made it to the final table, made it to the top five. And again, impressed with the hands that we saw from him, just showed why he is one of the best in the world and why Chainsaw is talking out of his arse. But there was one player who really dominated proceedings right up until I'd say we were down to three. And that was a player we've seen before when we've covered the Sunday Million and other online tournaments. And that is Sunday Melon, who, if ever you want to see someone understanding ICM implications and understanding how to bully medium to short stacks, it was this guy.
Yeah, Sunday Melon just put on a clinic on how to just put people to the ICM screws, and it just went short stack would go broke. He put pressure on the medium stacks. A new short stack would develop. The short stack would go broke. Lather, rinse, repeat over and over again. And also, there was something so poetic about this dude, Sunday Melon, who we always like to see in these events because the name just cracks us up. Also a decent player out of Poland.
The terrible then, Photoshop avatar is also just hilarious.
So funny. He's just got this half a watermelon slice pasted over the Sunday Million avatar. And so we're like, oh, this is going to be it. And then when they're three-handed, he just ran into it one hand and doubled up his opponent, while there was still a short stack at the table. They go to break, I believe, right?
They went to break, came back, and within two or three hands were heads up. And it was Crossbreed 17 who came into the heads up battle with the chip advantage and never surrendered that advantage. And what's interesting is, and this is where it goes from being a short tournament to a long tournament, right? I think it was almost as much time to get down to two as it was to get down to a winner. The heads-up battle was meaty. And Sunday Melon just kept mounting this comeback and then running into it and getting back down to 100 million chips, then back up to 200 million, 300 million, then back down to a million. But crucially, Crossbreed never surrendered the chip lead, and on multiple occasions, I'm going to say at least seven or eight occasions, had Sunday Melon against the ropes. And it just felt inevitable as we got into the last half hour, just felt inevitable that no matter how valiantly Sunday Melon kept fighting back, eventually Crossbreed is going to deliver the knockout blow.
Yeah, and you could really feel for Sunday Melon. It must have been pretty frustrating at one point having over half the chips in play when they were five-handed and then never getting back to having half the chips in play when they're heads up. And also at one point, Crossbreed did offer a deal.
Correct.
And said, hey, do you want to take a look at the numbers? And Sunday Melon said, no, let's gamble. Now, here's the bad news is the gamble for like 250K didn't pay off. Maybe it's 270, right? What was it, 733 second?
I kept rounding it and saying it was the better part of 300 grand.
Okay, so the good news is Sunday Melon, despite its sort of, I'm sure, being disappointed, still won over $700,000, and Crossbreed won $1 million. Pretty good news either way you slice it.
Absolutely. Congratulations to the winner. I think I'm right in saying, and I said this on the live stream last night, second year in a row that the title has gone to Brazil, Crossbreed 17, the Sunday Million Anniversary Champion, $1 million richer. And even though, I'm not going to lie, sometimes heads-up poker is not the most interesting poker for me to watch, but that was actually a pretty entertaining, a pretty strong heads-up battle to watch, even though it was 90 minutes long. I didn't mind it. I was there for it.
It was strong, and I think that part of the reason why it's maybe not that interesting to us is because there's only a certain level on which we can enjoy it, because heads up is so complicated.
Yes.
And it, and because it is, it actually looks simpler to me. I'm like, well, this is and so I think as James, as we continue to play more poker, I think that eventually heads up may grow on us a little bit more as we start to understand the game on a deeper level as well.
So I'm sure there'll be regular Sunday Million streams on Monday nights from Nick Walsh on the PokerStars Twitch channel. We'll be doing some stuff during Scoop. And before then, of course, we'll have our live streams from EPT Monte Carlo. But we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks on our Monte Carlo preview show. Well, I just mentioned Monte Carlo there. Of course, 90% of our time, focus, and attention is on the European poker scene, which does make sense when you consider that the European Poker Tour is our bread and butter. But I am aware that a lot of poker is played in North America, and a lot has been going down in the USA in recent weeks. So let's catch up with the senior US editor for Poker News, John Soffen, for an all-important poker news update. Welcome, John.
Thanks, James. Joe, good to be with you guys. Appreciate it, even though it's I'm usually not up at this time of day at 8 o'clock in the morning, but had to make an exception to join you guys for sure.
I'd like to say the time difference is the reason why we keep our noses out of American poker for the most part. But I also could probably say that there seems to be a lot more drama associated with what goes on in America than what goes on in the rest of the world. We'll get to that in a second. Before we do, John, tell us a little bit about yourself and how this U.S. senior editor role eventually ended up happening for you.
How did it happen? Back in 2021, I was writing for Cards Chat, a couple other sites. I had done some freelance writing, whatever. They had someone leave, Chad Holloway, of course, you guys all know.
Yep.
He came to me, asked me if I was interested. I said, sure, sounds good. And that was kind of the start of it. So I've been with Poker News now for, a little over 2.5 years. I love the role. It's fun. It's fun covering the US beat. As you said, there is a lot more drama and controversy surrounding it, which is kind of my bread and butter.
Okay. I was going to ask, what is your actual background, John? Are you a poker fan who became a writer, or a writer who decided to specialize in poker?
Sort of both. I've been playing poker since 2003. I was part of the Moneymaker boom, of course, like everybody else, it seems. I started playing 1-2. I don't play as much anymore. Working in the industry, I sit and watch poker enough. It's like, I don't want to sit at the poker table as much, but I actually have been playing quite a bit lately again. I've been playing for 21 years. I got to do my math there, but yeah. Now working in the industry, I actually been in the industry since like 2015. I was writing for Cards Chat before. And I enjoyed that, but now couldn't pass up the full-time gig in Poker News.
You know, one last question I guess I would give you is that people write to me all the time, and they say, oh, how do I get my start in the industry? How do I become a poker commentator even? How do I do this or do that? And I always say, start writing about poker right now. Like, go and write a blog, and then maybe someone, no offense to Cards Chat, but a smaller type of place at Cards Chat, by the way, which everything starts small. Smaller outlets are always looking for people who are willing to write, and people like Rec Poker now, stuff like that. And was that sort of your path? And do you recommend that sort of path?
Yeah, I would recommend that path. My path wasn't exactly like that, because I was actually, before I got into poker, I was just doing freelance writing in general. So like, I was writing about basically any topic imaginable. I was using these like freelance job boards and stuff.
Okay.
And that's actually, I believe that's actually where I found Cards Chat. I found like just some small gig with them at first, and then they just kind of hired me on essentially full time. But I was writing about basically anything, man. I was giving back in like 2010, I was doing like dating advice, stuff like online dating advice, like sites and crap like that. Like, I think my first writing gig was actually probably the most boring writing gig ever, which was like funeral planning advice and something you'd never want to do, but it doesn't matter. Like, it was just, I was building a portfolio.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
So like, that's the way to do it. It doesn't even matter. Like, even if you're not being paid for it, just start a blog, man. It's that easy. Like, start a blog, somebody will eventually find it, you know? So, yeah.
Okay, great. That's exactly my advice too. So glad to hear that we're on the same page about that. I guess let's start off with, first of all, your thing with Norm and Chad, is it a genuine animosity? Is it a friendly? I can never tell with him.
No. I love Norm and Chad. I text them all the time. I just like to troll Norm and Chad. It's like basically the only reason I'm on Twitter anymore.
It is sometimes hard to tell the difference because sadly Norm does have some genuine enemies in poker. So we have to work out who are the people who are trolling him and who are the people who actually genuinely hate him.
No, he knows I'm trolling him. I love trolling Norman Chad. He's a good sport. Like Norman doesn't take things too seriously. That's why he's one of the best.
Absolutely.
Probably should be in the Poker Hall of Fame, along with Karen, of course.
Agreed.
But I like to troll him. That's one of my favorite things about Twitter anymore.
I agree Norm should be in the Poker Hall of Fame only because if he isn't, what shot do I ever have? All right. First thing that I wanted to bring up actual news story. This just broke yesterday, I think. I mean, we didn't talk about this ahead of time. Did Connor Richards somehow get a mainstream news story out of Princess Love and break it before any of the gossip rags?
Sort of. So Princess Love, right? Reality TV star, Ray J, singer, right? They're getting divorced. And the... You know, like TMZ and all the whatever the
hot. And Ray J, of course, being famous originally from the Kim Kardashian sex tape, right? Like, isn't that the first time most of us ever heard of him?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like, to be honest, I'm not big on my celebrities. All right.
Okay. All right.
So, anyways, one of these tabloid rags, whatever you want to call them, that I don't read, they had reported on that actually just yesterday or the day before. And it was, the headline was something about, oh, it's a messy divorce. It was a messy divorce. But Connor actually had interviewed Princess Love on the WPT cruise last week or the other day. And it's actually, he got the real scoop, which is it's not a messy divorce. They're still best friends, yada, yada, yada. But I got a better Ray J story, actually, during the WPT at Wynn in December. Our guy, Jack, our video guy, Jack, had Wynn interviewed Ray J. And because Princess Love was kind of deep in the tournament. And he was there. He's all there supporting Princess Love. And Jack liked his passion or something. He had no idea who he was. Jack had no idea who Chris. He went and did a full interview with Ray J. He did a full interview with Ray J, having no idea who this guy was. And then after, fantastic. Like, yeah, dude, that was Ray J, man. Oh, he's like, oh no, shoot, you know. And, so that was pretty funny. But yeah, but as far as the current story, it's basically, yeah, Connor kind of sort of scooped TMZ.
Bit of an
exclusive.
We're
hoping they'll pick it up eventually.
Love it. Cool. You mentioned the WPT cruise. I love the fact that we have gone full circle, right? Because the early days of the WPT, you had the very first PokerStars Caribbean adventure was on a cruise ship. Then there was the Party Poker voyage as well. And now cruise ships are back. Not only do we have the TV show The Good Ship Murder, where there's a poker tournament on a boat where one of the players is killed, but now the WPT is running poker tournaments on cruise ships. All I've seen from this, by the way, are Barry Carter's tweets, which are hilarious. And I'm interested to know whether the real experience of people on that boat was genuinely like what he was posting.
I would assume I didn't get to go, right? I wasn't cool enough to go, but so I had to see all the tweets and all the pictures and stuff. And we all have FOMO, you know, if you didn't go on the cruise, hopefully next year I'll get to, but yeah, it sure seemed like I don't think I saw anybody complain about it, which is great because poker players like to complain. And, it must have been a really great time if nobody was complaining, right?
I'm not going to take away from this WPT cruise because WPT really does seem to do a lot of things the right way. Obviously, most of their praise is earned. But I will say one way that you're not going to see a lot of complaints about a cruise is if you give away half the cabins. And I'm not saying that's what happened. But I think there were some heavy discounts involved for some of the influencers and some of the big poker tweeters who went. I'm sure it was still great, but I did like this tweet from Matt Salzberg, who says, suggestions/improvements about the WPT cruise Twitter post for next year. More underwater pics of sea creatures. 25% more praise for the WPT higher-ups. Videos of the luxury suite should feature glimpses of topless royal flush girls frolicking in the background. Live stream of every meal. That is kind of what the rest of poker Twitter felt like while everyone was on the cruise. Now, did I still want to go? Yes. Did it sound like a rollicking good time? Absolutely. But I do think that I was like, okay, enough already. Enough. We get it. It's probably awesome.
One counterpoint to that, Joe, I would say is even for those who are on it for free, man, poker players will complain about anything. If you've seen Alec Hester's Twitter, that guy gets comped for like every meal. He complains about comp meals. So I do think it was everybody who I've talked to that was on it, and they had a great time. So
okay, good. I'm glad to hear about it.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that people are not happy about, turns out, John, is the WSOP Tournament of Champions. What's going on there?
So my thing with the WSOP. So for those who don't know, the WSOP Tournament of Champions, the last couple of years has been at. It was at the well. Actually, last year was in the middle of the series, but in 2022, it was at the end of the WSOP. It's for the circuit ring winners, the WSOP throughout the year. So if you win a circuit ring, you're entered. It's $1 million free roll. This year, they're actually moving it out to Commerce Casino in Los Angeles, which is like 4 hours from Vegas, and it's going to take place actually right before the WSOP starts. So a lot of people are mad about that. They expect it to be in Las Vegas. It's just not. So there was some, who was it? Rampage even said, oh, I won't even play because of it. Or was it Rampage? I'm trying to remember. I believe it was. But anyways, I think really, to be honest with you, so WSOP or the WSOP circuit is hosting a series right before the WSOP at Commerce. And that's kind of how they're like promoting it. Right. So it makes sense from a business standpoint to do so.
I guess so.
You don't need to promote the WSOP.
It does feel weird, though, to take a brand like the World Series of Poker Tournament of Champions and remove it from Vegas and not run it during the series proper. Just feels like a bit of an own goal.
Yeah, I suppose. No, there's definitely a lot of people upset, and I can understand that. I also can see what the WSOP is doing. They want to make this like pre-WSOP series. They want to make it big, right? And by bringing it out there, you know, it brings attention. They have a good relation. They're trying to establish a relationship with Commerce Casino. So I understand that. But I also understand why people are upset. You know, everybody's going to be in Vegas over the summer. They don't want to travel to Los Angeles. I get that. But I think at the end of the day, my thing is this: a lot of the anger that you see sometimes in poker, and this is not just for this type of story. You see it on Twitter, but most people in the poker community really aren't as upset as what it's portrayed on Twitter, right?
Sure.
So I don't think as many people are. I don't think people are going to have such an issue with it. Once it comes around, I think people will be happy. It's a free roll, man. It's a free roll tournament. But I do understand that why people are mad. I get that.
Sure.
And they have every right to.
So I guess the countdown is on now, though, right, to the World Series of Poker proper, because it seems to start earlier every single year. It used to be June, now it's May, and it kind of feels like it's the middle of May that it gets underway. The schedule is out there, so I'm sure people already identified the events that they're going to be playing. Sadly, I'm actually on vacation during the main event this year, so I won't get to play the main, but I have looked, and I can get there for the very end. I think I can be there for the last weekend to play the Lucky Sevens and the Closer. So those are the two tournaments I'll be playing this year. But what has been the general reaction to the World Series schedule this year, outside of the controversy about the Tournament of Champions?
You know, actually, this is the first year. Like right now, we're kind of like in the calm before the storm, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to figure out what events are going to play, booking their travel to Las Vegas and all that. But you know, I would actually say this year is probably the first year I haven't seen a lot of complaining about the schedule. A lot of controversy. Everybody seems to like it because there seems to be a really, really good mix of tournaments for pretty much everybody. Like, I mean, whether you're just a low stakes grinder or a super high, or you play high, super high stakes or mid stakes, and it's kind of spread out really well throughout the summer, right? And, yeah. and there's a lot of events for the mixed game players, the PLO players, the no limit hold'em players. Everybody's got something. So there's not a whole lot of complaining this year, which is good.
So far, so good. All right, I'll take it.
Right? Now let's see if that carries over. Now, once the series starts, that's when all the drama and the complaining will start. But, you know, right now, so far, it's everybody's happy.
Now, I teased this in the beginning. Apparently, Robbie Jade Lou is back in the news, but it's for something good?
Yeah, actually, I was actually up there covering near Sacramento at Thunder Valley, which is a really cool casino. This is my first time there, by the way. If you guys haven't been there, it's a great...
Oh, your first time experiencing Thunder Valley. Yeah.
Dude, they got some good food out there.
I'm hoping to bring James up to Thunder Valley for the Run Good event in July. We're still trying to work out our schedule, but man, I'm glad cool. You were there for that. What, and tell us what happened. What'd you see?
So it was weird because I was covering the WPT event and they were playing down to the final table. And like, I'm trying to like right behind it, Robbie's like heads up with someone and, heads up, and it's like a $500 tournament. You know, she won like 11K or something like that. But afterwards, I got to interview her. So I had to sit down and interview with her. She's super, super friendly, like super genuine and stuff like that. And unfortunately, she became known in poker for something that probably don't want to be known for.
Just stinks, right? Because like most of us, we all came down on the side of, we just thought it was a weird coincidence at hand. Okay. That was our, our stance on this show. And if so, then it is something she should be known for, right? Like it is, if it's just like a weird call off where she ended up being right. Now, I guess my follow-up question is, I think I saw her winner's photo and she was holding up Jack 4. Was that just for the photo? Or what, did she win it with Jack 4?
That was a troll. She actually had Ace Jack, so she had half.
Okay.
She had half the hand.
I mean, you've got to own it, right? If you are yep. known for that hand, if you are known yep. for playing Jack 4, you just have to own it.
Yep. That's, and I actually talked to her about that, and she said, you know, at this point, she said, like, I think her comment was like, at first, I was a little bit annoyed. I was annoyed of it, you know, because I was being accused of cheating and stuff. But now I just, you know, I realize that it's part of me now. You know, is what she said. It's who I am in poker. It's what I'll always be known for. She could win 6 WSOP bracelets, and she'll be forever known as Jack 4. You know,
that's true.
But it's unfortunate, that situation, because you know the fact of the matter is, whether or not she cheated, there's no way Garrett can prove that she cheated, and there's no way that she can prove she didn't cheat. And that's why that's kind of like what's unfortunate about it. But you know, she's super friendly. She's very cool. I think a lot of people like her, and it's just too bad that's how she kind of made her entrance into the poker community.
I mean, I don't want to go over old ground, but number one, the burden of proof is on the accuser. Secondly, again, I've seen that hand in its entirety multiple times. My personal view on it is that she butchered the hand. She was an inexperienced player. She should not have been playing in a game that big at that point in her poker career. And she was embarrassed. She tried to talk her way out of it, which in many ways made it worse. But you're right in the sense that we don't maybe know everything that was going on there that night. Anyway, moving on.
For sure.
I just thought we could throw a little love to our American counterparts in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ontario, mm-hmm. North American counterparts, and Michigan with U.S. Coupe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, I know over in Europe and Canada and around the rest of the world, I mean, it's Scoop season, but, you know, your international viewers may not realize it is here too. It started, April 5th, runs to the 22nd, I believe. Yeah, we've got in Pennsylvania and Michigan, they have a shared liquidity site. So the merge player pools. And then we have a separate PA scoop in Pennsylvania. So, yeah, there's a lot of events. I believe $7 million guaranteed across the tournaments in Michigan and Pennsylvania. So it's a big series, too. It's not, you know, Scoop is not just an international thing anymore. It's pretty big here in the U.S. too.
Yeah. Should highlight that, like, Southern Europe has its version of Scoop as well for, like, yep, France, Spain, and Portugal. And this is the nature of the beast, right? As we've seen the poker mm-hmm. market become fragmented over the last decade or so. Of course, the real, and I know this is such a hot topic, and I know that we don't want to go down the line of talking about regulations and licenses, but can you imagine a situation where, even if it is only four or five states, if they're all able to play together, if the Canadian provinces join as well, that US Scoop with everyone playing together, then we're talking, right? Then you're talking big fields, big guarantees, and a series that in many ways can rival the so-called international series.
Don't jinx it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someday. I just hope that someday in my lifetime, you know, we have legal U.S. legal poker in all 50 states. I don't know if that'll happen, but, you know,
I'll take the under on 50.
On 50. Okay, let's go. I'd like to see in the next, like, 5 years, at least a few more states on board. And also shared liquidity. Correct. Among right. all those states yeah. would be wonderful. Because if we could do that, yeah, I mean, you're talking like Scoop, I say it's 7 million this year. If that happens, we're talking 20, 30 million.
I think it's a realistic goal. I'm not saying it's achievable, but it's a realistic goal that within 5 years, you've got double digits in terms of the number of states, and they are sharing the player pool, and that will be mm-hmm. a significant market.
Sure, I'd say if we're setting a betting line on that happening, I'd say it's pretty close to even money.
Yeah,
like of that happening. Woo! That's not unrealistic one bit.
You guys are giving me chills.
Come on, give it 5 years. Just give it five, maybe yeah, yeah. 5-6 years, and we'll be getting somewhere. But the dominoes will start falling. See what would happen if a state like California or whatever legalize online poker, the dominoes would start falling. Like the other states, you need to start seeing, okay, then you'd start seeing, okay, Oregon, Washington, all the, it would just start going all across the country. We'd start having online poker. We need the big, big states to do it.
Florida. I hear you. And I'm going to say, I'm not an expert in this area, but I'm going to say California is worse than even money. California is a domination situation.
Oh, California's going to be tough. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, always has yeah. been, always will be. Let's close out the poker news roundup with, we're more of a mainstream pop culture type of show for the most part. And I know yeah. that there is a poker pop culture crossover happening. Did we miss it? Well, tell us about it. What's going on?
So Athena Jett, she auditioned for American Idol. We went to Todd Brunson's Roman Deli in Las Vegas. And we interviewed her, and she made it through the audition. They voted her on to Hollywood, where she didn't make it through like the first, what is it like? It's called like Hollywood Week. I'm not big on like American Idol myself, but like it was really cool. She's super talented. She's extremely talented. She's like this like a modern jazz singer. Okay.
Oh, cool.
And very talented. 20-year-old. She goes to UNLV. So yeah, that was really a fun story to cover. We went to, they invited us out. They had a watch party for her audition over at Roma Deli. And I went to that, and that was really cool to see. She did really well. Didn't make it very deep. Because she got through the audition, whatever. But they voted her off the show, but she still did very well.
Finally, John, before we cut you loose, I suppose we should talk about the magazine cover, but not that one.
Oh, no.
But not that one. Uh-oh. Don't worry. We're not actually All touching right. that topic today. But what I did come up with is, John, it's a tradition on the show that when you're a guest, you got to play one of my stupid games. And this week's stupid game is about the most controversial magazine covers of all time. Okay.
This sounds fun.
A little trip, a little history lesson, and that's it. It's. I just decided to call it a quick recovery, even though, because that's all I had in the moment. Simple game. Here we go. Question number one, all multiple choice. A 1968 Esquire magazine cover featured this controversial figure pierced with multiple arrows. It was called The Passion of the and it was this person's name. Okay, here we go. Was it John Lennon, Martin Luther King Jr., Muhammad Ali, or Mr. Ed?
Okay, so the most, usually pick out the most like ridiculous one out of a multiple choice question. So I don't know why, but I'm going to go Mr. Ed.
Okay, John's first time on the show.
Right, John.
Yeah, go help out John here. Yeah.
The fourth option is always a joke. So actually, you only have to pick between A, B, and C. Ignore D. It's never D.
You said 1967? 68. It's got to be Martin Luther King Jr.
Muhammad Ali is correct. Here we go. Moving on. Question number two. Possibly inspired by the Muhammad Ali cover, a 2006 Rolling Stone cover entitled The Passion of Kanye West featured Kanye West wearing what? Was it swaddling clothes, a crown of thorns, the shroud of Turan, or a tiny crucifix with himself on it?
Thorns?
A crown of thorns is correct. Here we go.
All right.
Two for two. Question number three.
Two for two.
What was the name of the magazine that published the infamous Kim Kardashian Break the Internet Oily Ass cover? Was it? Remember that? She like squirted the milk up in the air and it like went up over her back onto her butt and then it was just her gigantic oily ass?
Nope.
No, but I'll say yes. This?
Okay, here we go. Was it Paper Magazine, Pauper Magazine, Proper Magazine, or Pooper Magazine?
Pooper would actually be fitting and funny. Proper.
We're looking for Paper Magazine. Paper Magazine had the break the internet. It is worth Googling, guys. I'm not going to lie. It is worth seeing that cover. Question number four. What was the headline / caption on Ellen DeGeneres' famous Time magazine coming out cover? Was it, guess who's gay? I'm gay, deal with it. Yup, I'm gay. Or when life gives you lesbians, make lesbian aid.
That was so bad. let's do the first one.
Guess who's gay?
Yeah, that's it.
No, I'm sorry. We were looking Yep, I'm gay. Question number five. The February 2017 issue of German magazine Der Spiegel depicted Donald Trump cutting the head off of what? Was it the Statue of Liberty, Mount Rushmore, the Lincoln Memorial, or Seabiscuit?
I'm gonna go with the Mount Rushmore. He's cutting it off to put his head on.
The Statue of Liberty. He was cutting the head off the Statue of Liberty.
That would make sense that Trump would do that. He'd cut it off to put his own head on, to replace his own head on it.
But the problem was it talked about the head, and Mount Rushmore has four heads.
Four. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Two questions left. Two questions left. You can try to salvage this, John.
Yeah.
A 2003 Entertainment Weekly issue featured the Dixie Chicks without clothing, but with words written on their bodies. Word cannot be found on the cover? Sluts, traitors, Saddam's angels, cattywampus. Now, the rule we gave you at the beginning doesn't apply to this one, just so you know.
Oh, what was the fourth one then?
Cattywampus.
Cattywampus.
Correct. All right, here we go. You can go two for two. You can go two for two to finish this out here.
All right.
In the year 2020, some real morons freaked out over a Vogue magazine cover depicting which megastar wearing a dress. Was it LeBron James, Justin Timberlake, Harry Styles or Rick Moranis?
Don't think I've ever seen LeBron in a dress. Don't think I've ever seen... Ooh, that's a good one. Timberlake?
Just think about the fact this is 2020, not 2006.
Harry Styles.
Yay!
Without any assistance whatsoever, you nailed it.
We got there. You know, John spent too much time writing the insides of the magazines. He doesn't really focus on the outsides. Doesn't really focus on the covers.
Yeah. I was going to say, who actually reads magazines anymore? I had no idea that certain magazines existed until recent social media controversy.
All right, Sports Illustrated. That's about it. In my lifetime. Sports Illustrated. That's about it. Yeah.
John, thank you very much for this poker news update. Glad to hear that fun things are happening over in the USA, and hopefully we'll see you on the circuit soon.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate one last thing on the way out. We've mentioned Eric. Shout out to Eric Seidel. Won a poker tournament at US Poker Open yesterday.
Nice.
All right. Former guest on this show.
There you go. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John.
Okay, well, it's time for us to meet this week's superfan. Actually, it's someone we've already met. Because, Josh Rawlings, not only did you come to our 300th episode show at the Hippodrome, but also we saw a little video about you during the Irish Open.
Was at the Poker in the Ears podcast where I saw you guys in the flesh for the first time.
Yes.
I didn't know that you'd seen the video, but I recorded that bit at the Irish Open. Unfortunately, after I'd busted, but happy to take part.
You're on like a free shit sun run right now, as far as swag is concerned.
Yeah. So just to tell anyone who doesn't know the story, Josh came to the podcast, played in the free roll, eliminated Fintan Hand, and of course all of the guests had bounties on their heads, mystery bounties. You pulled an envelope, silver power pass. You came to Dublin. You played the Irish Open main event, and you made the money.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few details missed there. I knocked Fintan out with aces, and my best friend, one of my best friends, pulled the bounty for me.
Okay.
As Joe said, on a bit of a free roll sun run, made the money. I think I came 307th in the end.
Wow.
Felt really good. Felt really confident. I think my losing hand was ace queen versus aces. That went all in on the flop, which came queen high. So I was pretty happy with how the whole event went. I actually lost a big hand to the winner, where I had pocket fives, and he actually uploaded a video to YouTube where I found out that he had queens. And right. So I actually made a really good lay down in the end. But I think I lost a few too many chips against him by doing that.
So, of course, we saw the video about you, Josh, because in that video, you mentioned that you've never applied for Superfan versus Stapes because you couldn't come up with a specialist subject. So we decided to get Patrick to put a proverbial gun to your head to force you to pick one.
Yeah, that's right. Never been able to settle on a topic, but was having a think. I think I initially suggested Ocean's 11, which I was shot down and told that it had already been done before.
Very recently.
which shows the fact that I've probably missed one of the podcasts in the past. But I've only been listening since, I think it was June 2022. I looked back at my podcast app, and June 2022 was when I started.
Well, there's only 303 episodes you could have listened to before this, Josh. So I'm going to go ahead and give you a pass on missing one or two of them. How did you settle on the films of Yorgos Lanthimos?
I was thinking of films that I've watched and I enjoyed. It's weird to say that I enjoyed watching The Lobster or Killing of a Sacred Deer, but I enjoyed them from the perspective of they were interesting movies to watch.
I enjoyed The Lobster. I think The Lobster is a black comedy. I think that there is a lot of joy in The Lobster. Some of the other films, not so much.
I should have picked The Lobster, by the way, because... I did not like this movie. I thought this movie was well acted,
yes.
Well written,
yes.
A great vibe, like the aesthetic was really cool. I did not get this movie. I did not like this movie. I mean, I understand the plot of the movie. I just don't know what it was trying to say. I thought it was needlessly violent. I thought it was needlessly, I know this is going to sound crazy, me, Joe Stapleton, I thought it was way too much sex in it, that we could have gotten the same idea with way less graphic. This movie was just not for me.
Well, spare a thought for me, Joe, because I decided to try and watch Poor Things on a plane. And when you're sat there on your iPad watching something and everyone's walking past thinking that you're watching porn, it's very embarrassing. So, Josh, what did you make of this movie?
I loved it. I thought it was really good. As much as you didn't like the explicitness of it, or that there was far too much content in the movie, I thought it told the story really well of the title character. And I think it was really reflective of sort of the male and female interaction throughout the movie. So I really enjoyed it. I think there's a lot of things that could be written about and spoken about. And I watched it with my partner, and she was basically saying, like, oh, I'd love to write an essay on this. So, I thought it was really interesting. And
it's definitely an interesting movie. I will give you that. Before we launch into the quiz, you've already won a silver power pass. You're now playing for a bronze power pass. When you're not playing poker, when you're not winning stuff, what do you do?
I'm a civil servant.
Okay. Doing the work of His Majesty. Okay, let's get to the quiz then. It is producer Chris who has compiled this quiz. So any problems with any of the questions, the unfairness, the imbalance, take it up with him. Don't complain to me. Josh, as our super fan, as our guest, you get to go first. I need a number between 1 and 10.
It's always coming 7.
Question number 7. At which stop on the cruise does Bella give away Duncan's winnings?
So it would have been after they went to Alexandria. So it was when they were leaving Alexandria on the way to Paris.
Alexandria is the answer for 2 points. And Joe, you're up.
I'm already in a bad mood because I would have known that answer. Give me the snowmen's.
Question number 8. What is the name of the madam at the brothel?
I'll take the choices.
Is it Madame Silver, Madame Swift, Madame Song, or Madame Swiney?
Swiney.
For 1
Madame
point.
Madame Swiney.
Any number other than 7, 8?
We'll continue the run. Number 9.
By the way, we decided that I can never figure out what my girlfriend's going to look like in her 60s, and we decided that she'd probably end up, she's going to look like Swiney.
who's also in Andor, right? She's the guy's mother.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Sure.
Question 9. In Lisbon, what does Bella become obsessed with eating?
Was it the custard tarts?
It is the custard tarts for 2 points.
I know what her dates become obsessed with eating. All right, let's go. Next question. Move it on.
Well, you have to pick, Joe.
Give me the biggest number possible.
Number 10. The brain of what animal is inserted into the body of General Blessington?
A goat.
It is a goat for 2 points. By the way, anyone who hasn't seen this movie is like, what the fuck?
Anyone who has seen this movie is like, what the fuck?
Yes. Questions 1 through 6 are available, Josh.
We'll go for 1.
Question number 1. Who directed the film Poor Things?
It's a hard name to remember.
Yorgos Lanthimos. I can't say his last name, but okay, his name's Yorgos.
Good enough for 2 points. Joe, 2 through 6.
I'll go 2.
The film was based on a novel of the same name. Who is the author of that novel?
Get the fuck out of here. Just give me the choices. I don't think I'm going to get this.
Is it Irvin Welsh, J.G. Ballard, Val McDermid, or Alistair Gray?
Alistair Gray.
Alistair Gray for 1 point. Josh, you have a 6-4 lead going into the penultimate round. 3, 4, 5, or 6?
We'll go 3.
How many Oscars was Poor Things nominated for?
Wow.
It was nominated for 11.
It was.
Holy shit.
And you get the bonus question. How many of those 11 did it win?
They won 4.
You get the bonus point.
I think it was... I can go through them.
Go
I
on.
Think.
Go on. I'm not going to give you any more points. You don't need them, but I'm impressed with your knowledge.
It won't matter. Give them points. Who fucking cares?
Best actress.
Yes.
Best costume design.
Yes.
Best hair and makeup.
Yes.
I can't remember the fourth one.
Ah, what a loser. Production design was the fourth
production
and final
design,
one.
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay, Joe, 4, 5, or 6?
4, please.
What is Bella Baxter's real name?
Bella Baxter's real name is Sophie something. I'll take the choices.
Is it Edwina Pennyworth, Sophie Knight, Regina Wallace, or Victoria Blessington?
Oh, it's Victoria Blessington.
It is indeed, for 1 point.
I don't know how I came up with Sophie, and Sophie was a choice. That's fucking weird.
I changed one of them to throw you. 5 or 6?
We'll go 5.
What is the first hybrid animal seen on screen?
Is it the... Oh, what is it?
He's not going to take the options. He's going to go for it.
It's the duck and the bulldog.
It's the duck dog for 2 points. Wow, you have a full complement of points. 10 plus the bonus. Joe, you can't win, but you're going to know this one. What does Godwin Baxter frequently regurgitate?
Oh, like a burp bubble.
It's a giant bubble. So 7 points is your final score, but with 11, Josh, you are a winner. That means another power pass of the bronze variety is coming to you, along with some Poker in the Ears merch. Thank you for finally coming on the show. Thank you for finally taking part.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you have a big closet. You must have gotten a ton of free fucking clothes in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I got a couple of t-shirts and a jumper. I also got a shameless plug for Darrow Kenny, but his satellite strategy book.
Cut that out.
Came with the Irish Open goodie bag.
Well, you're not getting any books from us because Joe doesn't like reading, but you are going to get lots of fun stuff and that power pass. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, my babies, that's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. Coming up next time, one more episode, regular episode, before our Monte Carlo preview show. And guess what? We got Will Jaffe.
Fantastic. Very much a man of the moment. And because we're advertising a week in advance who our guest is going to be, and because this is going to be very much a chance for us to get to know Will, a bit of a profile piece, if you will, we would like you to suggest your questions. So get on the Discord. I will advertise one last time that there is a link to the PokerStars Discord server in the podcast description, and there is a dedicated podcast discussion channel on that server. Give us your questions. And also, while you're there, who else would you like us to talk to on this show? What do you want to hear about? Give us ideas for future podcasts.
Yeah,
superfans. Come after superfans.
Give us ideas for super fan subjects, which, by the way, if you hear me talk about some movie that I watched that I liked at the beginning of the show, like a Wrath of Khan, super fan, that's something that I wouldn't mind doing. I didn't finish Ford versus Ferrari yet, but those kinds of things. And remember, always down for like a little general trivia. You want to do science again or history again or geography again? Let's go. Let's do it. All right, my babies, that is all the time we have got for this week's show. Until next time, for James Hardigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.